Let me bid you welcome and appreciate your being here. We say it so often, but we say it sincerely. It's good to get together. So appreciate your desire to be with us this morning to give our worship and praise to God as a congregation of God's people. By the way, the hymn following the lesson this morning, number 943 will serve as a song of encouragement and invitation. There is an outline on the back of your bulletin this morning if you'd like to follow along. Ask my brethren to kind of look around. I know we have company with us. Please share if you see someone that did not receive one, if they would like to follow along. Title of the lesson is The Brevity of Life. Or as the text that was read to us this morning, that was said to me, said to Hezekiah, set your house in order. I remember the story of an older man ask a young man upon his graduation from high school, what are you going to do now? Well, I guess I'll go to college. He said, what then? Well, I'll get a job. What then? Well, get married. Yeah. What then? Well, have children, raise a family. What then? I'd advance in my career. What then? Retire? What then? I'll die, I guess. What then? What then? I heard the story of a man walking through a cemetery. He was reading instructions on the tombstones. He came across a tombstone that had this inscription. Stone read, stop, my friend, as you go by. As you are now, so once was I. As I am now, you soon shall be. So prepare yourself to follow me. Well, the man thought about that for a while, and he came back the next day with a piece of chalk in his hand. He wrote underneath that tombstone, he said, to follow you, I'm not content until I know what way you went. Amos chapter 4, verse 12, the Old Testament prophet wrote, therefore, thus I will do to you, O Israel, says the Lord, and because I will do this to you, prepare to meet your God, O Israel. Prepare to meet your God. Solomon said in Ecclesiastes 9, verse 5, the living know that they will die. And all some of these scriptures I don't have in your notes or in your outline, but they're in mine. And the idea, the Hebrew writer said in Hebrews 9, verse 27, it's appointed unto men once to die. An appointment. And after that, the judgment. So just as we make preparations for events in life, and we do, we need to make a preparation for death. You know, in the funeral business, they advertise and encourage people to make arrangements before you need them. They call that, I want you to purchase this need before you die. So they call it a pre-need opportunity. I remember just a couple, probably a month or so ago now, but I received in the mail from a cremation company, a Trident Society, I think it was. They offered me a discount of $300 if I purchased that pre-need with it by September. I don't know if they know something I don't, or if I have to die before September to get the $300 discount. They told me, buy it now and save $300. But the point of the advertisement, the point of this lesson, is set things in order. Set your house in order. Death is evident, isn't it? We've experienced that in this congregation over the last several months. We don't need a notice from God like Hezekiah that was given to Hezekiah for the time of our death. We don't receive that. in verse 1 of the scripture reading that Rick gave us this morning, Isaiah the prophet went to him, meaning Hezekiah, and said, set your house in order, for you shall die and not live. Just as events in life are important to prepare for, more important is to put our spiritual house in order. And that's the lesson this morning. Set your house in order. I don't know the author of this article. You probably have seen this somewhere in your going, but it's called The Dash. You know, typically when we have a funeral notice, we put the date of the birth and that dash, and then the date of death. This is how the author, or the in the poem form, wrote it. That I met a man who stood to speak at the funeral of a friend. He referred to the dates on the tombstone, from the beginning to the end. He noted that first came the date of his birth, and then he spoke the following date with tears. But he said what mattered most of all was the dash between those years. For that dash represents all the time that he spent life on earth. And now only those who love him know what that little line is worth. For it matters not how much we own, the cars, the house, the cash. What matters is how we live and love and how we spend our dash. So think about this long and hard. Are there things you would like to change? You never know how much time is left that can still be rearranged. If we could just slow down enough to consider what is true and real, and always try to understand the way other people feel, and be less quick to anger, and show appreciation more, love the people in our lives like we've never loved before. If we treat each other with respect and more often wear a smile, remembering that this special dash might only last a while. So, when your eulogy is being read with your life's actions to rehash, would you be proud of the things they say about how you spent your dash? The dash. The word death, as you know, you've heard me say in many funerals, means separation. Anytime a death takes place with any living thing, something separates. With us, that's a separation of our soul from its body. That's what happened when Jesus was crucified on the cross. The spirit returns back to God who gave it, and the body remains here for burial. Many times we speak of the body here as the remains. But Solomon said in Ecclesiastes 12, verse 7, the dust will return to the earth as it was. Spirit will return to God who gave it. Remember when Jesus was crucified on the cross, his last words in Luke 23, verse 46, he cried out with a loud voice and he said, Father, into your hands I commend my spirit. And the verse continues, says, and having said that, he breathed his last. And as you know, then Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea went to Pilate and begged for the body of Jesus. They take the body of Jesus down from the cross and they prepare it for burial, then they bury it in Joseph's tomb. Separation takes place when something dies. But secondly, that separation, I put this in your notes, we have separation of earthly ties. Because as you know, while we live, we always say, I'm going to see you soon. I'll see you later. Let's meet again. I'll see you at the holidays. When David and Bathsheba's baby died, David asked the question, can I go to him? He answered his own question. The answer was no. I shall go to him, or shall he return to me? David said, no, I shall go to him, but he shall not return to me. But then there's a third way, area of separation, and that is when death takes us, there's separation of opportunity to make preparation for death. Right now, while we live, while we're alive, as we've written that poem, The Dash, you have opportunity to make changes. You have opportunity right now to obey the gospel if you've never done that before. You have opportunity to visit or to pray. Solomon said in Ecclesiastes 9, verse 10, whatever your hand finds to do, you do it with all your might. And then he gives a reason. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. For there's no work or device or knowledge or wisdom in the grave where you're going. Whatever we do, we'll have to do it now while we live. So I want you to consider these three things in our lesson this morning. Number one, the brevity of life. And you're familiar with these. James chapter 4, verse 14 asks the question, what is your life? And he answers it. It's a vapor that appears for a little while and vanishes away. For that, we ought to say, if the Lord will, we'll do this or that. In James chapter 1, verse 10, he says, because as the flower of the field, he'll pass away. For no sooner has the sun risen with the burning heat than it withers the grass. Its flower falls and its beauty, beautiful appearance, perishes. 1 Peter 1, verse 24 describes the brevity of life, again using the phrase, all flesh is as grass. All the glory of man as the flower of the grass. The grass withers. The flower falls. Oh, but the word of the Lord endures forever. Isaiah 40, verse 6, again with that illustration of grass. All flesh is as grass. All its loveliness is like the field. The grass withers. The flower fades. Surely the people are as grass. Brevity of life. Job 14, verse 1 says, man that's born of woman is a few days and full of trouble. He comes forth like a flower and it fades away. He flees like a shadow and does not continue. Job continued in chapter 7, verse 6, my days are swifter than a weaver's shuttle. There's my day. In Job 7, verse 8, as the cloud disappears and vanishes away, so is he who goes down to the grave. 2 Samuel 14, verse 14, for we will surely die and become like spilled water on the ground, which cannot be gathered up again. Brevity of life. In Psalm 90, verse 10, you're familiar with, the days of our years are 70. Yet by reason of strength, they're 80. Yet is their strength, labor, and sorrow. And it's soon cut off. And we fly away. The brevity of life. It's like vapor, a flower, the grass, a weaver's shuttle, a cloud. Spilled water, and we fly away. We many times say at funerals, no matter how long a person has lived, we say they're gone too soon. Gone too soon. Second, in our lesson, we don't know when life will end. I don't know. Proverbs 27, verse 1 says, don't boast about tomorrow. And then that phrase, you don't know what a day may bring forth. Don't know. James 4, verse 13 says, come now, you that say, here tomorrow we'll go in such a city and spend a year there. We'll sell and trade and get gain. Whereas, again, you do not know what will happen tomorrow, for what is your life? And then he goes back to the phrase, it's a vapor. Appears for a little while, then vanishes away. Ecclesiastes 9, verse 12, Solomon said, The man also does not know his time. I don't know. Then he gives an illustration, like a fish taken in a cruel net. Now the fisherman drops the net. His fish don't know if he'll be wrecked up or not. In Psalm 90, verse 12, the psalmist says, "Teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom." So while we live, while we're in that dash, we can make a change. In Luke chapter 12, verse 16, Jesus spoke a parable to them, saying, "The ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. He thought to himself, saying, 'What shall I do?'" No, he has plenty. "I have no room to spare my crops." So he said, "This will I do. I'm going to pull down my barns and build greater. And there I'll store all my crops and all my goods. And I'll say to my soul, 'Soul, you've gained many goods and laid them up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry.'" Oh, that sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Now, that's what I'm going to do. "But God said to him, 'Oh, foolish one, this night your soul will be required of you.' And then, whose will those things be which you provided? So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." You've heard me key on that phrase, where the God said to him, and after you die, "Whose will those things be which you provided for yourself?" In other words, do you realize, brethren, everything you own will one day be owned by someone else? Everything you own, when you die, will be owned by somebody else. And Solomon said, you don't know what kind of care they'll take of those things. I don't know when life will end. I don't know. Now, verse always says tomorrow. Not guaranteed tomorrow. Not guaranteed this afternoon. Then the third one, life is not defined by material things. In Luke 12, verse 15, Jesus teaches a parable again. And then he closes with these words: "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist of the things that he possesses." Our life is not defined biblically by what we hold in our hands. Matthew chapter 6, verse 25, Jesus said, "Isn't life more than food and the body more than clothing?" Isn't life more than that? In Matthew 16, verse 26, Jesus asked a question: "For what profit is it if he gains the whole world?" I'm number one in possessions. I have the whole world. But you lose your soul. What profit is that? Solomon said in Ecclesiastes 12, verse 13. Let's hear the conclusion of the whole matter. All right, what is it? After all everything we just said in the last 15 minutes, what's the conclusion? Fear God. Keep his commandments. For this, fearing God and keeping his commandments, is the whole of man. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. There's a hymnal that we used to have, and it's not in this one, but you're familiar with the song. It's titled, "Prepare to Meet Thy God." We'll close it. Hear the words. Begins in stanza one, "Careless soul." All right. That describes you. You need to listen up. Careless soul. Why will you linger, wandering from the foot of God? Hear you not the invitation, all prepared to meet thy... Second stanza. Why so thoughtless are you standing, while the fleeting years go by, and your life is spent in folly, all prepared to meet thy God? Third stanza. Hear you not the earnest pleadings of your friends that wish you well? And perhaps before tomorrow, you will be called to meet thy God. Last answer. If you spurn the invitation till the Spirit shall depart, then you'll see your sad condition, unprepared to meet thy God. The chorus. Careless soul, oh, heed the warning, for your life will soon be gone. Oh, how sad to face the judgment, unprepared to meet thy God. That's the lesson. Always at the close of a lesson, we sing a song of encouragement, a song of invitation, a song of exhortation. Provide you opportunity to think about the things you've heard even this morning or previously, or maybe someone's been teaching with you. It's an opportunity to obey those things that you know you should do if you haven't done it already. To obey the gospel message. Jesus' last words before he ascended back to the Father. In Matthew 28, the closing verses, he said, all authority has been given unto me in heaven and on earth. He says, go therefore and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I've commanded you. And lo, I'm with you always, even to the end of the age. Mark records it in Mark chapter 16, verses 15 and 16. Again, go into all the world. Preach the gospel to every creature, everybody. It's an open invitation. He who believes and is baptized shall be saved. Jesus wanted a salvation to be taught by his disciples worldwide. And that's the invitation, and that's the preach, the message. Salvation was an occasion of joy. In Luke 15, they found the lost coin, let's rejoice. Found the lost sheep, let's rejoice. One sinner repented, and there's joy in heaven. The son comes home. Let's kill the fatted calf. The son that was lost is found. He who was dead is alive again. It's meet or necessary to make merry when there's salvation. Salvation is always an occasion of joy. When Philip preaches to the Ethiopian in Acts chapter 8, and he asks him, the Ethiopian said, here's water, what hinders me from being baptized?